take everything that we learned in class.
So just before we get started, some guys wanted to talk about a little bit of a question of like a derech of approaching Chumash. Because, in terms of Chumash, so obviously I'm talking about like Bereishis, Shmos, the stories of the Avos and the great figures in Tanakh. And sometimes there's a tendency to romanticize the stories and turn them into like a literature and approach them from as ordinary characters living out ordinary problems in life and looking at it in that sense. Yeah, it's interesting. Plato in the Republic says that plays and literature, he was very against those things. Says this really should be banned.
When you're recording?
I'm recording, yeah. So why? Said the plays. I think it was the. I haven't read it in a long time, but I remember he was against theater. So why was he against theater? So he said, because what's an interesting play? What's an interesting movie, an interesting story? Is it about the tzaddik who goes and does everything right? Lives a perfect life? Nah, that's not interesting. Nobody's interested in that kind of a story. People are interested in is seeing strife and conflict. And really, he was saying they like to see things that they wish they could do being done, like a vicarious enjoyment of the bad guy, more or less. There's an enjoyment in theater of watching a person who's really evil and evil tendencies, and these kinds of things play out, and the person enjoys that. It's enjoyable.
Traditionally, you see the good guy win, so to speak.
You like to have it because you feel better at the end of the day, but you enjoy watching the bad guy. That's the interesting part, you know. But and he said that's not good because that's just feeding in. It really is just feeding into certain bad emotions. No, it's just the bad emotions that are being excited by these things. It's the enjoyment. Even the good guy generally has certain means that are not. You know, the good guys that we enjoy watching are the guys who break the rules a little bit to accomplish their goals, you know. So we like that enjoyment he felt was not good. So the problem is that if you're going to turn the events of Tanakh into stories and plays and literature, that's the tendency, is to sort of put it into that framework and enjoy the drama of the characters. And the problem is that type of a setting is implying or imputing to the avos the base emotions and the base drives. And now you're trying to see, oh, Yaakov and Esav and all these fights, and you're getting into this sibling rivalry with Yosef and the brothers, and you're just bringing it all down to a modern-day drama. And but in truth, that's really degrading our avos and all the Bali and Masorah. And you are really just projecting onto them your own base emotions. It's like the Rambam says in the interpretation of Agadita. He says there are two extremes. Some say it's all, there are two extremes. Each one says it's all literal. And one says it's all literal and makes fun of Chazal, and one says it's all literal and they say and it's true and we have to believe it because Chazal say it. So he says, obviously, the first one is a very serious error. But even the second one, he says, is bad. Because they're bringing Chazal down to their level. They're saying, in effect, what they're saying is, I trust Chazal, because they're good people. But I don't believe that Chazal really had any greater chachma than I do. And therefore, if they say that this happened, there can't be any deeper meaning. Because a deeper meaning would imply that they're higher, they're greater people, and they see things deeper than I do. So even the second group that believes Chazal, so they have Amunas Chachamim, problem is they're changing and they're forming Chazal into their own image. And that's why they say, if Chazal said this, whatever outlandish statement the Medrash says, it must mean it literally. Because if I were to say that, I would mean it literally, since I have no deeper ideas to convey in this elaborate marshal. So in a sense, they're really lowering Chazal. They're projecting onto Chazal ordinary lives, ordinary mindsets, ordinary ideas. Just in a magical land, in a magical setting, that these people were great people. They must have lived in the land of dragons and wizards that doesn't exist anymore today. But they're not making Chazal greater in terms of Chachma and in terms of philosophy. They're just attributing to them magical powers, essentially. That's a great, great degradation of Chazal. Because we don't say that the greatness of Chazal is in their in these mystical fantasy things that they portray. We say, no, on the contrary, they were holders of tremendous chachma that we can't grasp. And they tried to convey it and hide it in a whole elaborate system of mashal. And essentially, we have to view it as words that are from people that we that are on such a high level that the ideas that were common to them, or the ideas that were attainable or understandable to them, we can sometimes barely even grasp. And we have to recognize that there was a whole reason that sometimes knowledge has to be hidden, and there's a whole other framework. It's not any different than if you were to overhear a conversation between two great physicists talking about something and you wouldn't understand what's going on. It'd be the same type of thing. You're just eavesdropping on a conversation of people who are on a much higher level than you and are speaking on such an elevated plane that you simply can't understand what it is. And that should be the attitude towards Chazal, towards Medrash. It must have great ideas because that's their greatness. And if I can't understand it, it must be because it's too difficult for me to reach. Not, I understand every single thing that they're saying because there's nothing deeper than I can understand. That's a very, very terrible degradation of Chazal. Basically, just a statement of your own inability to see that there are realities beyond your grasp. It's an egotism. So I say the same thing. If you cast the avos in this same way, you just say, oh, whatever those stories sound like to me, however, I'm just going to interpret those stories how I would, what would drive me to do that? And that must be the same thing as driving them. It's basically, putting onto them your own mindset. When the reality is, we have to recognize that the very premise is that these individuals, first of all, were on a tremendous level of chachma and even nevuah. And it's true, like the Rambam says in the Shemar Prakam, it's true that even a Navi can have certain defects in his midos. It's not impossible to have certain deficiencies in his midos, but in his grasp of reality and in his ideas and in his ideals and in the framework of what's important and what's right, that they have to have the highest level of perfection in. So although Yaakov might have had a midah of fear that that was a defect, the Rambam says. But what it was that he was afraid of, that has nothing, that element of fear we might share. We might also have that experience here. But what it is that he was afraid of, and what it is that he cherished and was trying to protect, has nothing to do with us, has nothing to do with our lives. His ideals were far beyond our common concerns and our own petty issues. And the brothers might have had arguments about Yosef, but it wasn't on a simple sibling rivalry level. It was, the point is I'm trying to make, that the framework, their framework and their view and their grasp of reality is something that is beyond our commonplace notions. And that's the essence of who they were. But even though they were existing on such a high level, they still were possible. They had certain problems, certain conflicts, and the Torah is expressing those to teach us an idea that even people on these levels might have problems, might have to deal with issues in their own way. But the point is, we shouldn't project our same kinds of problems on them and our same kinds of issues on them. And on the contrary, we should say, what could it be that a person on such a high level would be reacting like this? Let me think into the ideas. Let me think into what's more important. Let me see how this type of a problem could be reflected on a true level, not just on a petty level that I do. Okay. And that has to be the approach. So if people are going to come and say that, Esav and Yaakov were just sibling rivalry and Yaakov is just a good boy and all of that, that's a statement of value. That's a statement of what of his essence. You can't say the essence of Yaakov is he was a good tatala who sat and listened to his daddy. That would be makhesh. I mean, that would be diminishing. You could say on the contrary. I mean, you say his godless was his ability to put all of his energies into his study and pursue that to the highest degree. Okay, whatever it is, that's not the point. But to say otherwise would be trying to turn them into common, ordinary, characters in a novel, so to speak, which would be furthest from the truth.
So, what would be the correct approach then?
So, for instance, like with the brothers and Yosef. So, you have to recognize. You have to analyze the story totally differently. You have to analyze in the sense of they were looking at the idea of setting up Klal Yisrael. And they saw Yosef as a kid who was tremendously talented, and the father was invested highly in him because of his chachma, like Unkelus says, Bar Chakem Ulo, because he wasn't the youngest kid. Binyam was the youngest kid. So they felt, but yet he was expressing these ideas that they felt were stemming from an emotion of that. So they felt that he was going to destroy the Klal Yisrael, that if the father invests in him, and they felt it was for the benefit of Klal Yisrael that he was he had to be dealt with. But those are ideas. That's an analysis in terms of projecting it onto a framework of reality. Now, of course. Did they make mistakes? Yes. but did Yosef make mistakes? Did Yaakov make mistakes? They all made mistakes over there. But what was driving them and what they were protecting and what they were interested in promoting was not simply their own gaiva, their own stake in the family, inheritance or things like that.
What about other characters in Tanakh? Not the...
Like love on Esav. Yeah, so Esav is an interesting character.
But according to the model that you're putting forward, it's very hard to objectively analyze the character of Esav because you can't assume that he's coming from a standpoint of some greater ideal or he has a perfected personality. Like it's kind of difficult to understand him.
Yeah, Esav is very difficult to understand. Yeah, you don't have to give him the same credibility as we give in Yaakov. And, but it is difficult to understand how a person could be in that situation. He can't be a low-level idiot, because Yitzchak wouldn't have been even been fooled by that. But in terms of Esav, you got to think in terms of Yitzchak, really, because Yitzchak was the one who really held out a great hope for him. No, yeah, definitely. Other people that interact with the Avos are not on the same level.
But that doesn't necessarily mean we should be critical.
An interesting example, you can see, like, Hagar's attachment to Yishmael and Sarah's attachment to Yitzchak were extremely different, because, what was Hagar's reaction? Hagar had a very unusual reaction when her son was dying. What was your reaction when her son was dying?
Left.
Yeah, leave. I can't watch him die. Right. I can't watch him die. So I was talking to my father about it last year. Is that a normal? What would you consider? I took a poll at the Shabbos table. What do you think of this type of a reaction? If your child, Rahmana Litzlan, is dying, wouldn't you think you should be cradling him till his last breath?
Well, I think is there a difference between, like, dying or being killed?
He's dying. He's sick. He's sick. He's dying. He's thirsty.
Dehydrating, yeah.
He's dehydrating. He's crying. She turned away. I can't watch him die. You can say, okay, wow, she loves him so much. It's so hard for her to watch him die. But I don't know if that's normal. I think on the other side, to comfort him in his hardest. So then the Malach said, go and take care of him, because he's going to also be a great nation. So my father was saying, her attachment to him was really just her own ego. So when she felt like he's dying, she didn't care about him anymore. The Malach told her, no, he's going to be a great man too. Then she was able to invest her energies back into him. But it was an emotional, of course all attachments are emotional in a certain sense. But the basis of that emotion was her own ego. As opposed to Sarah, her great desire for her great love for Yitzchak was to be sure that she could participate in the reality of Klal Yisrael, and she didn't want Yishmael to corrupt him in any way. And her Chazal say she died at the thought of him, of Yitzchak not being killed at the Akedah. But that wasn't, of course there was a tremendous emotional attachment, but it was based on a desire for the greatest good to mankind, to participate in that. And that was her sincere desire. So, of course, they both are having reactions, But we're not saying that the others didn't have emotional reactions or feelings. I mean, it's clear that they did. But that's not what differentiates a great person from a common person. What differentiates the great person from the common person is what the attachment of the emotions is to. Like, for instance, I mentioned before, when it says Yitzchak, when it says Yaakov loved Yosef because he was Ben Zikunim Hulo, so Unkelus changes it to Bar Chakim Hulo, meaning it wasn't just like a commonplace thing, the youngest kid you love. It was attached to, that wouldn't be the Avos. Of course, loving a child is normal. Even the Avos are going to have a love for a child. But it's not going to be based on a commonplace thing like the youngest kid. That's just a commonplace emotional thing. It's the chachma of the child.
Right, I think the Radak also points out that they're all Ben Zikunim.
And like I mentioned, Binyamin was really the youngest. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to explain. There's a difference between, it's not an ego pleasure. There's a desire, there's a true desire. If you recognize the truth and you want your existence to be an existence of truth, so then you want to participate to the highest degree in that reality. That's a desire. Look, let me visit. Everything ultimately is selfish, okay? In a certain sense, everything goes back to doing the best for the self, right? But the question is, in what framework? Which self are we talking about? Most people are thinking about the emotional self, and they have this fantasy that if they're famous, so famous that people will talk about them after they're dead, somehow they're going to enjoy that. That's some fantasy of trying to have this idea that somehow if they can be talked about long into the future after they're dead, then the pleasure that they have now being talked about will somehow be continued beyond that. But that's obviously just ridiculous. Whereas what we're saying is, if you can attach yourself to the desire to have a legacy is not necessarily wrong. Because it could be, like we were saying before, a measure of the greatness or of the reality of your existence here. So to participate in building a great institution that's going to... Why would a person want to say, I want to participate in building a Torah institution that's going to last many years. Why? It's not because he wants people to think about him many years from in the future. It's because that is a greater... That's the mark of a greater institution.
But when
that, hold on. That's the mark of a greater participation. If I can participate in something that's going to last a few years or something that's last many years... What's a greater attachment to the reality of Marbet's Torah? Obviously, it's to engage in something that will last beyond your life. But it's not because I want to be thought of after I'm dead. It's because I want to have a greater degree of participation now. Let's say a guy writes a sefer. It's not because he wants people to read about him when he's dead and somehow his lips are going to move in the grave. That's not what he's interested in. He's interested in investing in the reality of Torah, and that is a greater reality if he can participate in something that will exist to benefit more generations. So I'm saying that Sarah's attachment to her great desire to participate in the Shalshelas HaTorah. In Yitzchak, as the Zera of Yaakov, we have to recognize, we have to remove it from the common mundane idea of just creating a dynasty. That would be bringing her down to a level of a TV drama. That would be wrong. That would be wrong. We have to understand it on a higher plane. But the point is just because there are those facets that remind you of those other things, the key is what is driving them, what is behind them, and what they're attached to. Yeah. The question is, what if there are two people? Is it better to participate? Is the participation itself the good thing, or just the fact that it's existing? So in other words, with Sarah, I was off the record. We were discussing Sarah and Agra, but Sarah's concern that Yishmael not participate in the Yerusha of Avram was that because she didn't want to be left out, or was it because she's recognizing that there were deficiencies in Yishmael that Avram didn't see that would ultimately harm the formation of Klal Yisrael. So that's a good question. Now, it's a question like this: if Yishmael would have been just as good, so then would Sarah have felt bad that she's simply not participating? Or do we have to say that she only was upset about Yishmael because the reality that she was that she felt she could produce with Yitzchak would not come to be with Yishmael? It is interesting. Chazal do say a very strange statement about the Imahos. They say the Imahos were a mitzvah shelo lishma. Yeah.
How can people be a mitzvah?
I'm sorry, in having children. The Gemara says that a avera lishma is equal to a mitzvah shelo lishma. Right? So he says, what's an avera lishma? Yoel was an avera lishma because she had the relations with Sisera in order to kill him, and the imahos were a mitzvah shelo lishma because apparently they did get some ego satisfaction out of having the children. And the Gemara says they're equal. They're on equal footing. So it does seem you're right. But the point is, it's what the attachment is to. You're right. It does seem the Gemara is saying that the Imahos were concerned to participate as well. They weren't just going to be as happy if somebody else was able to produce them. But still, that drive is all of the ego is bound up in the reality of the good. And you're right. You're right. I guess a person can't ever really fully separate themselves from the ego completely. I would say one other thing. This is a little bit off topic, but I would say one other thing having to do with the theme that we started, and that is it's important to recognize that desire in man to sort of validate his own baser feelings with other people and finding justification to your feelings through other people. And I would say it's also something very, very dangerous with friends. And it's you really have to be careful about that as well. Sometimes people have friends that they enjoy the friendship because that person does things that they like watching but don't want to do. And it feels that it's like there's a certain, what do they call that, vicarious pleasure out of having a friend that is expresses things in a way that you desire to do, but are recognized. It shows you that you recognize it's wrong. That's why you're not doing it. But you're enjoying watching others do it. That's a very, very dangerous, detrimental, harmful thing. Because the stronger that every one of those pleasures, and that's why Plato was so against that, every one of those engagements and pleasures shifts who you are a little bit, because it's like exercising that muscle. That becomes a little bit stronger, and you're not the same person. Just like you don't step into the same river twice, you don't watch the same event same way.
It hasn't removed the emotion?
No, absolutely not. This is a very important idea that we've had throughout the years, and that is the difference between people don't talk about these things anymore. The difference between an outlet and an indulgence. It's a very, very important distinction. There are certain things that are healthy outlets that have a way of channeling off excess energies, but there's another thing that's an indulgence. That you indulge in the very bad thing itself in a way that you deem to be safe, but in fact, it's giving it more strength. In a certain sense, it's feeding it, and it is encouraging it.
How do you know which one is when you're doing it? Yeah.
Right. So it's a good question. Like, for instance, let's say I'm an aggressive person. Let's just say that. I'm an aggressive person. Let's say I would like to kill people. Let's say I walk down the street and I have fantasies of pulling out a gun and blowing people's heads off. I'm not sure where I'm going.
It's always the quiet ones.
Just making this up. So would it be good for me or bad for me to play a video game where that's in fact what I do?
Not sure.
Not sure, right?
Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad.
Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. What do you think? Or watching extremely violent movies. You think that's good or bad? If I have those sadistic, violent tendencies. Is it good to do that or bad to do that? Or maybe it's better to beat somebody in a basketball game. Is there a difference between those two things?
You don't mean physically beat somebody in a basketball game.
No, if you lose, then you do that. But if you win, then you...
Well, I don't know, 1 year...
But is there a difference in the pleasure that you're getting when you're playing the video game or the pleasure you're getting when you're competing in a sport? So I'm saying both of them have an aggressive outlet. But one of them is actually the fantasy of what you want to do. So you're sort of feeding a fantasy.
I mean, but instead of saying feeding, I say you're experiencing fantasy. You're
and that's not good. That's not a healthy channeling away. The whole idea is to try to take the energy and satisfy it away from that idea. not to satisfy it in that idea. If you're satisfying it in that idea, then you're becoming more fixated on that idea.
Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm becoming more fixated on basketball.
Maybe.
Spend energy,
but that wasn't your problem.
No, I know. I'm saying, but are you saying that whatever? Area
I don't think so. I don't think so because the fixation to basketball is just there's no natural draw to the fantasy. There's no fantasy element of basketball that is a harmful thing that draws you into. It's the competition that you enjoy.
Right.
So yeah, okay, and eventually, hopefully, you'll take it down from basketball to something more productive. You'll probably just get an injury at some point, and that'll put the end to the whole thing. But that's what I'm saying. So the question though is this was the big question though. This is some of the thought problem. What about playing a game where you're killing Nazis? Is that okay, or is that? That's perfectly motivated. Is that a harmful indulgence or is that a healthy
outlet? Killing a
mullet. That fantasy is you being that person. That's part of the fantasy. So you're reinforcing this ideal of being this person. You're reinforcing the ideal that it's a good. There's a certain part of you that still feels it's a good. Mm-hmm. And by living it out and enjoying it, You're a certain part of you that is being satisfied being that killer. Now that is not a good thing to promote in yourself. It's an interesting thing. You know, the Gemara says a little different extreme. The Gemara says that people born under certain situations have certain emotions. So one of the things is that if you're born in a certain time period, you'll either be a killer or a shochet, I think it was. Right? Something like that.
I thought a mole was also one of the things.
What's that?
A mole.
So one of the Amorim things says, I was born under that and I'm not a killer or anything like that. So he says, no, you kill people in the base medrash. You're a killer in argument.
I feel argument, like that's just like a cute story that, like, when they were compiling, they're like, yeah, that's a cool story, let's start it.
But it means to say that there are these, you do have, some people do have aggression, and there's a question of where you are channeling it. But to channel it into the base expressions, I don't think is good. Mm-hmm.